Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's January 18th, 2021, live to be rebroadcast January 20th, 2021 on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. We are currently broadcasting live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut on Mondays at 10 o'clock a.m. on Facebook Live. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. So we're going to talk about some basic how to keep yourself healthy and finish off with all about your liver. But first, I want to say happy birthday to two very special people. One of them is Lucy Latina, who's down in Florida with her daughter, Francie. She's my good friend for years, and I get to go visit her and Francie when I'm down in Florida. It's her birthday today, and she shares a birthday with my beloved nephew, Harry, who is 15 today. So we'll be getting together for a virtual birthday party. Maybe I need to find us some virtual cupcakes or something.
Virtual cupcakes?
Yeah.
What something is a virtual cupcake?
It's a cupcake. It can be real in your hand, but, you know, you show it over the internet.
It appears on the screen.
That makes it virtual.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's so, technology. Yes.
Yeah, so maybe I'll find some actual cupcakes and we'll stick a candle in them because, you know, Harry's in New Jersey, so we'll be having a little gathering virtually and singing him happy birthday and stuff later. That's what we do right now.
Mm-hmm. So, boy, do we ever.
Yes. By the way, it's, how long is it? It's been over like a week and a half after Ron and I both had our COVID-19 vaccinations.
Oof.
And yeah. We're fine. Are you fine?
I'm okay.
We're fine. As far as we know, we're fine.
So far, so good.
Some people told us we wouldn't be fine. If we are not fine, we don't know about it. I mean, I don't have any other fatigue other than, you know, the fatigue of riding my bike a lot and running a business and all the other things that are going on in society right now. I feel okay. My arm's completely fine. And the flu-like symptoms went away in 2 or 3 days. So that was really nice. So,
But if you're not fine and you've had the shot and you'd like to share it with us, we'd love to hear your experiences.
Yes. Yeah, that's true too. And you should also contact the CDC. There are ways to do that. If you go to cdc.gov, there are ways to report anything that's happened to you adversely. That's worth reporting. And we have a text that comes to us every day where we report what's going on. I think it went on for a week, did it? Something
like that. I think it finally stopped for me.
Yes.
I did not get one the last couple of days.
Right. So, you just get a text every day and you would hit it and then you'd respond to a survey. How are you feeling today? Do you have any symptoms? Are there any other symptoms that you have going on? And you click send. It took 5 minutes to do. It was fine. So we'll probably do that again the next time. Ron's going to get his next dose of the vaccine on February 4th. Something like that?
Yes.
And I'm getting mine on February 19th because that's when I could get an appointment. And it looks like there's going to be mass vaccination sites soon in Connecticut. I'm not sure how that's going to work so they can get as many people vaccinated as soon as possible. Just remember, if you do get vaccinated and you go somewhere where you're not part of the VAMS system, I mean, I don't know if you will be or not, but if for some reason you're not, just make sure that when you get a vaccine, when you get your second dose, that you get the same one that you got the first time. If you wind up getting Johnson & Johnson or AstraZeneca, if those are let go into the public, those are single dose vaccines, so you don't have to worry about it. So, but the ones that we took, the Moderna, as well as the Pfizer, which we did not take, they're two doses and you need to follow the instructions for getting your second dose. All right. So, we were talking about, to some extent about cardiovascular health. And this week we want to talk about, foods that are good for your heart. So here's things that you can eat that are good for your heart health. Because we were talking about the Mediterranean diet last week. So when you eat the Mediterranean diet, you eat foods that are good for your heart. So now we're going to talk specifically about foods that are good for your heart. whether they're Mediterranean or Italian or Jewish, or doesn't matter. So first of all, you should eat your leafy greens. How many times do I, any of you who have come to see me, you know that I am a big proponent of the leafy green, whatever that is. And I get very frustrated when people don't eat green things. We try to eat something green every single day.
Yes, we do.
We eat a lot of salads. We eat spinach. We eat saag paneer, which is made from spinach. We eat stir fries with broccoli and other greens in them. We try to eat some greens every day. Yesterday I had a protein shake and I put some green powder in it, which sort of counts. But, and if you're a person who just absolutely won't eat green vegetables, that is a way to go. If you want to find a green powder that you can hide in something, that's something you can do. But things like spinach, kale, and collards, they have a lot of vitamins, minerals, and antioxidants. They're a great source of vitamin K1, which helps you with blood clotting. And they also have nitrates in them, not sodium nitrate that's bad for you, that's in processed meats. But we're talking about nitric oxide, which helps to dilate your blood vessels. And if you have any issues with high blood pressure, nitric oxide can help with your blood pressure. When you eat leafy greens, you can get like a 16% lower incidence of any kind of cardiovascular disease. And a high intake of leafy greens also is linked to a significantly lower risk of coronary artery disease. That is when you get buildup of plaque and blockages in the arteries leading to your heart. When those are blocked, it can lead to a heart attack. So if you eat leafy greens, you are less likely to get a heart attack. You heard it here. Okay. You're also less likely to get a stroke because it's going to tend to lower your blood pressure. Whole grains. So of course, if you're eating keto or if you're eating very low carb, you might not be eating whole grains. If you are doing something like Noom or WW or some other dietary plan that allows you to have carbs, or you're just eating carbs because your weight plan includes them, if you eat them whole, it's better for you. There's germ endosperm and bran in a whole grain. And so if you're eating wheat, you want to be eating whole wheat. My preference is that you eat ancient wheat like einkorn so that it doesn't have the hybridization and mold and the high level of amylopectin A that's in modern wheat. So einkorn is going to be better for you. Oats, brown rice, rye, barley. And it says buckwheat and quinoa here, but buckwheat and quinoa are not grains. They're seeds, which are just fine. And you can throw them in. They function like grains. Like, you know, you eat them with a stir fry. But buckwheat and quinoa are not technically grains. They are pseudo grains. They're really seeds. And they're not in the same family as wheat, rice, oats, barley, corn, which are all in the cereal grass family. Those two, one is an amaranthaceae, and amaranth is also, it's in the same family as quinoa. And buckwheat is a polygonatum. It's in the same family as psyllium and plantain and things like that. Not plantain bananas, but plantain the herb that you put in salves and in other combinations. It's a mucilaginous herb, so it has plant goo in it, which is very soothing to mucous membranes. So whole grains can benefit your heart health specifically. Eating 3 or more servings of them a day was associated with a 22% lower risk of heart disease. I wonder if you didn't eat grains at all, though, and instead you replaced that with a lot of produce, would you get the same effect? I would say probably. The thing is, if you tolerate, not everybody tolerates grains. So if that's you, if you eat any kind of grain and you get a bad stomach from it, or you get inflammation from it, you don't have to eat them. There are ways to get those nutrients without eating grains. It's perfectly fine. However, if you can eat grains, if you can eat things that are in the grain family, you want to eat them whole. So if you eat whole servings of them, of grains a day, it can decrease your systolic blood pressure by 6 milligrams of mercury, which can decrease your stroke risk by 25%. So eat your oatmeal at breakfast and quinoa at supper. So when you buy your whole grains, make sure you look at the ingredient label carefully. So you want to make sure that any product you buy that's a processed product, you want to make sure that it's 100% whole grain, that it's not, like if you can buy something called multigrain bread, and I had this nice sandwich on multigrain bread, and multigrain sounds really healthy, right? But you have to be really careful about that, because multigrain can mean that it's 20% this nice multigrain mix and 80% white flour. So multigrain, there's no oversight on multigrain. Sure, it can, and multigrain can be, it has wheat and rice in it, and that's all. That's two grains, therefore multigrain. So that's not how it usually goes.
A thin description.
Right, exactly. It's not, multigrain is not something that's overseen. Like, you don't have to have so many grains in it in order to call something multigrain. You also don't have to have a high percentage of multigrain. If you have 100% whole wheat einkorn bread, you're going to be better off than a multigrain bread that has 20% multigrain mix and 80% white flour. So watch out for that. Okay. Berries are so good for you. And I know berries are not in season this time of year. If you do want to get the antioxidant benefits of berries, there's a couple things you can do. One of them is you can get frozen berries and then put them in, make desserts out of them or make smoothies. This is a nice way to make a smoothie. You could do a protein shake with some frozen berries in it, and then you get your berries. Frozen organic berries are going to give you the antioxidants that you're looking for. This time of year, I haven't seen them quite yet, but soon, you know, in late January, early February, you'll start seeing berries coming from California and from Florida. Plant City, Florida, they grow a lot of berries there. So they'll be coming from up north, and you can watch for those. And if you want to get those, you can get usually blueberries and mostly strawberries. The strawberries are a big deal for, like, the Wish Farms and some of the farms down in Plant City, Florida. They'll be coming up and you can get those, and then you can start eating berries again. The nice thing about berries is a lot of people are concerned about their weight right now. They're looking around going, okay, I'm done with those holidays. I think it's time to start getting a little bit healthier. Berries are a great way to go because of the great antioxidants. Again, they protect against the oxidative stress and inflammation that causes the development of cardiovascular disease. So they keep your blood vessels nice and put together. And so they found that adults with metabolic syndrome drank a beverage that had freeze-dried strawberries in it for 8 weeks, and it decreased their LDL by 11%. So that's pretty good. So if one of the things that's going on is that you are having an issue with high LDL, low-density lipoprotein, the kind of cholesterol that the kind of protein that carries cholesterol from your liver to the rest of your body for use versus your HDL, which goes the other direction. Berries will raise your HDL and lower your LDL. So they are a good thing to eat. And another study found that eating blueberries helped with endothelial function. That's the blood, that's the cells that line the inside of your blood vessels, that they help the blood vessels dilate better, and they don't take on plaque, and they just, you know, they work better, and they don't clot as much, and you don't get blockages as easily. Berries are associated, as I said, berries associated with lowering LDL, and you can put them in a dessert, you can put them in a smoothie, and you can make healthy desserts with berries, which is really great. So you can make desserts with berries, which is really great. And you can make, really healthy desserts, that can have oats, and you can use a little bit of maple syrup or honey or coconut sugar, a bunch of cinnamon. You can use, if you want to make a streusel, you can put it together with a little bit of grass-fed butter or coconut oil, and you can put that over the top, and then you can have berries on bottom and bake it up, and then you have this great dessert that's actually healthy for you. Then you feel like you're eating dessert. It's nice. I think it's time for me to make one of those.
Okay.
Yes, a berry, and I like to do that with apples and or pears, too. Apple, pear, and berry crumble. That's a great thing I like to make. Okay, let's talk about avocados. Yay, avocados. We had some avocado with our grass-fed burgers last night. That was nice.
Mm.
They are full of monounsaturated fat, and the monounsaturated fats have been linked to reduced levels of lipids, cholesterol, and a lower risk of cardiovascular disease. They're full of fiber. They have thylakoids, which help with your weight. And when there was a study that showed that adding avocado to the diet increased reductions in LDL, and also not only did it decrease LDL, but it decreased levels of small dense LDL. Now, you've heard me before talk about how it's not just about how much LDL you have, but the size of the particles of LDL that you have. Well, avocados will decrease your small dense LDL and increase your large buoyant LDL, which means that monounsaturated fats in general are going to do that. And so if you eat avocado regularly, you're less likely to have metabolic syndrome, which is where you have high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, and blood sugar dysregulation. And lots of potassium. It's going to keep you calm. It's going to help your blood pressure once again. And so avocados are helpful in all those ways. Fatty fish and fish oil. This is a shock for you. The fish and fish oil are good for your cardiovascular health. I didn't know that. Yeah.
Jeez.
Salmon, mackerel, sardines, tuna, anchovies, full of omega-3 fatty acids, great for cardiovascular health. And there are those who, there was a study that showed that if you ate salmon 3 times a week, it lowers your blood pressure and tends to lower your total cholesterol, your triglycerides, your blood sugar, and your blood pressure. So it's just really, really great for your cardiovascular health. So is drinking water. Drinking water is also good for...
That was a nice audio of you drinking water.
Oh. Well, it's really good. Well, I'll use the compressor and the normalizer later. We'll get rid of it. So anyway, the thing is, yes, if you have a little catch in the back of your throat that because you're talking a lot, that you need water sometimes. It's just how it goes. Okay. So also, if you eat fish, it can help with your weight. So fish and fish oil can help you with your weight, your blood pressure, diabetes, obesity, can't lose. And if you're, some people just can't do seafood because it does have a smell issue and a taste issue. Not everybody likes it. You can take fish oil. There are ways to get fish oil in. So let's talk about this for a minute. What are good ways to get fish oil in? So, you know, I recommend fish oil very frequently. And I like to recommend liquid fish oil because it's a lot easier to get the dose in. You take your spoonful and you're done. And fish oil doesn't taste like plain cod liver oil that's unflavored. Cod liver oil tends to be heavier than fish oil, and you can take that too, as long as you're getting the right amounts of omega-3 fatty acids. But you can get nice liquid fish oils that, as long as they're fresh and they haven't oxidized, then if you and they're flavored with rosemary and lemon, they really just taste oily and lemony. They are very light tasting. Now people complain that they repeat on them, so there's some strategies around that. So if you find the fish oil tends to repeat on you, then one strategy is to eat it with one of your heaviest meals, so it's masked by whatever else you're eating. And so that's one way to do it. And the other is to, some people don't want to taste the fish oil at all, even if it is very fresh, even if it's very fresh and it has, it's been flavored and, you know, cause they have a memory of taking that cod liver oil and they just can't get past that. That's fine. So we give people pills for that. Pills. The thing is, the problem with that is that fish oil, in order to get a dose that's going to be meaningful for you, you often have to take a lot of it, and the pills tend to be big. And if you get little pills, you have to take a lot of them. If you want to get, you know, 500 to 1,000 milligrams of EPA, eicosapentaenoic acid, which is the one of the anti-inflammatory omega-3 fatty acids, and a decent dose of DHA, which is the good one for your brain health, you kind of have to take a lot. And if you take, there are brands of fish oil that you can take. If you take the liquid, you take 2 teaspoons full. So in other words, take one of your ordinary dinner tablespoons and you fill it up 2/3 and you take it and you're done. That's why I like to do that. You can also get emulsified fish oil. It's been emulsified with other ingredients, with glycerin and flavoring and maybe some xylitol. And it comes in flavors. And so it's kind of liquidy and gooey, and it tends to be more palatable. I'm going through a bottle of a lemon emulsion, so fish oil emulsion, so it's less oily tasting. The only problem is when you get emulsions, you have to put other ingredients into the fish oil to make the emulsion. So if you take a tablespoon of it, there's going to be less omega-3s in it than if you had a tablespoon of pure fish oil. That's why, you know, sometimes I'll take that emulsion. I just happened to have a bottle. I think somebody returned it, or you know, we didn't sell it for some reason. So I took it home, and I'm going through it. And when I'm done with it, I'm going to take regular fish oil, just because it is more economical. That's the other thing about taking liquid fish oil. It's more economical than taking pills. Now, if you absolutely won't take liquid, you then take the pills. The pills will work for you. It's okay. And the other thing is you have to make sure that your fish oil is fresh. So if you bite into fish oil and it smells very fishy or rancid, then it's probably not good. You want to get a fish oil that has some antioxidants in it. So if it has something like rosemary and or lemon in it, that's going to help to stabilize the fish oil. That's another reason why sometimes krill oil gets recommended. Krill oil is interesting because krill has astaxanthin in it. And astaxanthin is a wonderful antioxidant that's found in the ocean. And It helps to stabilize the fish oil that's in it. The only problem is when you take krill oil, the yield of EPA and DHA is much lower. And there are those who say even though the yield is much lower, it's so stable that it's going to be very beneficial for you. I don't tend to recommend krill oil as much as I recommend fish oil because the yield of omega-3 fatty acids is just so much higher in the fish oil. So the other thing is no matter what you do, the fish oil repeats on you. The next step is to try enterically coated fish oil. So you can get pills that have a coating so that the fish oil doesn't open up until it gets into your small intestine. It doesn't open up in your stomach, so it shouldn't repeat on you. I have people that even if they take the enterically coated, it still repeats on them. And then there are people who take the enterically coated and they do great with it. So if you've tried all those things, no matter what you do, you can't deal with the fish oil, then the thing to do is to go to a plant oil. Make sure you're eating your monounsaturated fats. If you can eat fish, then you should eat the fish. If you won't eat fish or take fish oil, then that's when you go to the plant oils. And doing olive oil. Olive oil can be very good for your health. Those monounsaturated fats, if you get good quality olive oil, great antioxidants, great polyphenols, monounsaturated fats will adjust your LDL and your HDL for the positive. And eating those anthocyanin-containing berries will also help your HDL and LDL. You can also take flaxseed oil. Again, with flaxseed oil, you have to make sure it's not rancid. So if it tastes bitter at all, throw it away. Flaxseed oil has alpha-linolenic acid in it, and your body has to convert the alpha-linolenic acid to EPA and DHA. EPA and DHA are the components of fish oil that are actually used in your body. You have to have a well-functioning delta-6 desaturase enzyme in your body for flax oil to be beneficial for you, and not everybody does, especially if you're dealing with chronic inflammation. Often you don't. So that's why we tend to recommend fish oil with people who have chronic inflammation. But if no matter what I say, you won't take fish oil, then you can take flaxseed oil, as long as it's not rancid. You can also take things with gamma-linolenic acid in it, like borage oil, evening primrose oil, and black currant seed oil. And gamma-linolenic acid is a wonderful anti-inflammatory, and it's found in these seeds. So again, as long as the seed oils are not rancid, you could take those. Walnuts. I love walnuts because they look like little brains. Brains. So I love to eat walnuts. I love the taste of walnuts. I had this weird experience when I was living in Newfoundland. My partner at the time, his name was Bill, he told me he hated walnuts. I'm like, how could you hate walnuts? They're so good.
Yeah.
They're so delicious.
Yeah.
How could you not like walnuts? And so when we got to Newfoundland, I got a bag of he had a bag of walnuts in his cabinet and he said, here, try these walnuts. They're no good. And I tasted the walnuts and guess what?
They were no good.
That's right. So what do you think was wrong with them?
They were rancid.
That's right. Very good. They were rancid. That's exactly right. So what does rancid mean?
They're off. They're spoiled, basically.
Yes, they're spoiled. Rancid means something chemically. It means is that the monounsaturated fats and the polyunsaturated fats in it have become hydrogenated. It means that they've broken down and they become hydrogenated. And it just happens when you have broken down monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats, they taste bitter. That's what happens to them. So that's right. These walnuts were bitter. I'm like, no wonder you don't like them. These are bad. They must have been sitting on the store shelf, you know, and it may be that they don't produce walnuts in Newfoundland, so all of the walnuts were imported. So any walnuts they were getting weren't good. So I managed to get walnuts that were packaged in a way that kept them fresh. And I said, here, try these. And he said, oh, these are good. So just make sure your walnuts are fresh. If your walnuts should not taste bitter, they should taste nutty and sweet, like nuts that are good, whatever kind of nut you're getting, whether it's a walnut or a pecan or a hazelnut or sunflower pumpkin seeds, they should not taste bitter. If they taste bitter, throw them out. That means that they are rancid.
The key here is to have a very good source for your fresh walnuts.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know, we're very fortunate because we have the food co-op in town, which is always very fresh.
Right.
But, if you're buying something that's been sitting in a bag for a long time,
It depends on the bag and where they came from and how long they've been sitting. That's all true. And another thing you can do is keep your nuts in the fridge because that will keep them cold and that will make them less likely to deteriorate. Heat will make polyunsaturated fats and monounsaturated fats break down. So if you put them in the fridge, they'll stay fresh longer. There are also online services where you can purchase really high-quality nuts, and they won't be rancid. They're very good quality. So if you're not going into stores or you're, you know, curbsiding, that's another option that you can buy. There are great sources online for various nuts. But walnuts in particular, the joke is that there's this idea of the doctrine of signatures where something that you eat looks like the part that it helps. So walnuts look like little brains.
It is.
And they, in fact, help with your brain health because they have a lot of fat in them. Monounsaturated fats are good for brain health because you're going to use that fat to shore up the strength of the neurons in your brain. So, and they also can help to protect against heart disease. And once again, because they have monounsaturated fats in them, they can reduce your LDL and lower your blood pressure, decrease your oxidative stress and inflammation, and, lower your lipids in general. They show a lower risk of cardiovascular disease. Then there's beans. Now, beans are controversial because if you're eating a low-carb diet, people who do low-carb diets or ketogenic diets, they tend not to eat beans. So beans are one of those foods that I say, if it fits into your diet plan, if you're not completely avoiding carbs or if you're not on a ketogenic diet or not on a very low-carb diet, you could eat beans. Because beans, it shows that if you eat beans, there's studies that show if you eat beans, they're good for you. And I eat some beans. So I have a funny thing that I'm doing right now. I'm taking moringa powder, and I've talked about the benefits of moringa. Moringa has great antioxidant properties and anti-inflammatory properties. So I'm taking the powder, and I was putting the powder in my applesauce, and it made my applesauce taste too green, too savory. So I didn't care for that. So I thought, hey, what if I take the moringa powder and stir it into a tablespoon of hummus? So I did that, and it's great. I mean, it's a little powdery and green with the hummus, but now I'm eating a tablespoon of hummus a day, and I'm getting the benefits of the hummus. I'm getting the fiber from the hummus. And I'm getting it. And if there's any other stuff in the hummus, like tahini, you know, hummus has chickpeas and tahini in it. So I'm getting the benefits of sesame seeds, and I'm getting chickpeas. So I'm getting the fiber from the tahini, and then I'm getting all the benefits from the moringa as well. So it's kind of a nice thing. Mm-hmm. So the thing with beans is they have resistant starch, and resistant starch is great because it resists digestion. It makes it into your into your large intestine, and then gets fermented by the beneficial bacteria. So it provides prebiotics for good gut health, and that's one of the ways that it helps. Anything that contains resistant starch is going to go through your digestive system more slowly, and it's going to slow down your absorption of food, and it's going to improve satiety. That means you're going to feel full sooner. So beans help with that. And again, not everybody can eat beans. If you eat beans, and no matter what you do, no matter how you cook them, no matter what herbs you put in them, you get gas from them and you feel awful, then you shouldn't eat them. You heard this right here. If you eat a food and it makes you not feel good, you don't have to eat the food. Even if it's a good for you food. If you eat broccoli and every time you get eat broccoli, you get horrible gas, don't eat the broccoli. Find something else to eat. It's okay. And I say that with beans too. I can eat a certain amount of beans. I'm doing just fine with the hummus. We, we have enchiladas and whatever that thing you made the other night was, that chicken. It wasn't an enchilada. Was it soft tacos? I don't know what it was.
It was the Mexican casserole.
Mexican casserole. Okay. So had beans in it. Eat that.
Yeah. Beans and rice and all sorts of good stuff. Peppers and good stuff in there.
Yeah. So, and beans reduce certain risk factors for cardiovascular disease. It can reduce your triglycerides. It can reduce your LDL. And it can also reduce your blood pressure and inflammation. So, and if you eat beans, you can also get flavanols. You can get anthocyanins in them if you eat darker beans. Black beans have a lot of anthocyanins in them. So you're going to get those wonderful antioxidant effects. Yay, chocolate.
Chocolate.
Rich in antioxidants, flavonoids, boosts your heart health, lower risk of heart disease with chocolate. People who eat chocolate had at least five times a week, I do that, had a lower risk of coronary artery disease than people who don't eat chocolate. Not everybody likes chocolate. It's true.
I know. I know it's true. It's just hard for me to understand.
I don't have that issue. I like chocolate. I'm a fan of the chocolate. Have to remind you that if you're going to eat chocolate, you want to eat beneficial chocolate. One of the things I'm doing with my special applesauce where I'm putting all the good amino acids, I'm using raw organic cocoa powder that's unsweetened. And so it hasn't been... it hasn't been dutched. It has not been alkalized. So it maintains the high antioxidant flavanol content. And dark chocolate can be helpful. It's a nitric oxide enhancer, so it can help you with your blood pressure too. Chocolate. So you have to be careful. The problem with chocolate, though, is it does have sugar and it has calories in it. But if you eat unsweetened chocolate, then you can have as much as you want. If you eat chocolate with sugar in it, then just make sure that it's at least 70% cacao, that it has not been alkalized, and then limit how much you eat. You have a square or two a day if you're on a fat loss plan or you're not getting a lot of exercise. But if you're eating unsweetened cocoa nibs or cocoa beans or unsweetened cocoa powder, you can have as much as you want. And like I said, I have a small amount of applesauce, which I put my amino acids in, and then I put raw organic cocoa in that. And it makes the applesauce taste really nice, and it doesn't taste bitter because the applesauce is making it taste sweet. The other thing you can do is have fruit. If you want to make a fruit salad, you can sprinkle cacao nibs on it. Unsweetened cacao nibs, and you'll taste the chocolate and the fruit will sweeten it, and then you'll feel like you're eating chocolate. It's really nice, and then you have that nice crunch. So chocolate can be really good for you that way. Then there's tomatoes. Now, yes, if you are a person who you don't eat tomatoes because you have inflammation and you avoid nightshades, then you don't eat tomatoes. Or if you eat tomatoes and you don't feel good for some reason, don't eat the tomatoes. It's fine. Having said that, if you can eat tomatoes, tomatoes are really good for you because they have lycopene, which is this great antioxidant. In order to get hold of the lycopene, the tomatoes actually have to be cooked. So you can get more lycopene from pizza or from eating pasta sauce or from ketchup or from the best one, believe it or not, is tomato juice. Tomato juice has been pasteurized, so it makes the lycopene very bioavailable. Great antioxidant, neutralizes free radicals. Lycopene has been shown to increase, if you don't have enough lycopene, you have an increased risk of cardiovascular disease and stroke. Foods rich in lycopene are generally associated with a lower risk of heart disease and stroke. And then they found, there was a study where they showed that people who were overweight, if they ate two raw tomatoes four times a week, then it raised their HDL. So if you eat a lot of tomatoes, you have better HDL. Your high density lipoprotein will be higher. And of course, once again, high density lipoprotein removes excess cholesterol and plaque from your arteries and keeps things flowing.
Yeah.
Almonds are my friends. I love almond butter and I love to snack on almonds. I tend to snack on almonds and then I put pecans and hazelnuts and walnuts in my salad. So almonds are very nutrient dense. They have a lot of vitamins and minerals. They give you nice skin. Do you think my skin is? It's all right.
Yeah.
Anyway, but almonds are actually studied to improve your skin health. And it's likely because of the monounsaturated fats. Monounsaturated fats get incorporated into your skin cells and also just reduce inflammation. They also protect against cardiovascular disease and help with your lipid levels. That if you eat 43 grams or an ounce and a half of almonds a day for 6 weeks, it'll reduce your belly fat and your LDL. Very nice. And I don't know if you do that, like if you don't change anything else, will that reduce your belly fat? Or if you do almonds in addition to eating a healthy diet, will it also help? Suffice it to say, if you eat almonds are very satisfying, so you might be less likely to eat some other things. And just eating almonds tends to raise your HDL, which is great. So you don't want to snack on almonds forever. Like you don't want to eat tons and tons of them. They do have calories. So if you eat too many nuts in general, you can get into a calorie situation. So you want to have maybe an ounce or two of nuts a day. Whether you have it in the form of nuts or nut butter, you want to have them in really high quality forms. Then there's seeds, all kinds of seeds, seeds and seeds and seeds. Love to eat them seeds. Okay. chia seeds, flax seeds, hemp seeds, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds. And really, buckwheat and quinoa are actually seeds. They're pseudo-grains. We call them pseudo-grains, but they didn't decide to be pseudo-grains. They didn't say, hey, I want to be like a grain, but I'm not really a grain, but I just want to hang out with the grains. They're their own thing. So we have just classified them as pseudo-grains because we tend to eat them in ways that we also eat grains. So quinoa and buckwheat and amaranth are not technically grains. They are seeds, and yet they function like grains because you can put them in a steamer and steam them up, and then you can eat them with a spoon and chomp on them, and it works as though you made rice. I'm a big fan of the quinoa.
Yes, you are.
Yes. So many kinds of seeds can reduce inflammation, blood pressure, and help your cholesterol and triglycerides. They all do that. Hemp seeds happen to be high in arginine, which is an amino acid that helps you to lower blood pressure and certain inflammatory markers. And flax seeds can help with blood pressure and cholesterol. And there was a study where people ate 30 grams of flax seeds a day for 6 months and decreased their blood pressure. And then there are people who ate flaxseed bread, which the bread, I guess they had a study where some people ate bread with flaxseeds in it, some didn't have the flaxseeds in it, and the ones who ate the ones with flaxseed in it, their cholesterol went down. So chia seeds need to be studied further about heart health, but there was a study that showed it lowered triglycerides. Then there's garlic. So I am an unfortunate person because I can't eat garlic because it gives me a bad stomach ache. And if that's you, you don't have to eat garlic if it makes you sick. So unfortunately, I'm an unfortunate person in that the alliums just don't agree with me. So I can't really eat onions and garlic and chives. If they're cooked to death, I can eat them. If they're really cooked down, and then of course if you cook them a lot, you're not going to get as much benefit from them. So if I'm in a good place and my stomach is feeling fine, I can eat a little bit as long as it's been really, really cooked. But mostly it gives me stomach ache. But garlic, if you can eat it, you're very fortunate because it has great medicinal properties. It's good for your cardiovascular health. It has this compound in it called allicin. Allison. That's not how it's spelled. So,
not you're how it's spelled. So funny.
No, and that's not even how it's spelled. So the family, not the family, the genus that garlic belongs to is the alliums. So garlic is allium sativa, and onions are allium sepa, and chives and shallots and leeks are all alliums as well. They are all in the lily family, but they are all, that genus is called allium. I can't think of what the species name for chives is, but allium sepa is onions and allium sativa is garlic. And allicin is usually, it's very high in garlic itself, so it tends to get extracted from garlic, and you can take high doses in pills. And there was a study that showed that if you took like 600 to 1500 milligrams of allium for 24 weeks, you could lower your blood pressure. That's too bad, because if I do that, my stomach will kill. I used to take garlic pills, and I would have a stomach ache after every time I took my supplements, and so I had to stop. And then there's other studies that show that garlic is an antiplatelet aggregator. It makes it so that platelets don't stick together as much, and platelets sticking together is one of the ways that you get cardiovascular disease. So because you you make plaques because you get damage to the inside of your blood vessels, and then the platelets want to go and patch up the spot that's broken down, and then cholesterol and calcium come to make this patch. And that's how that works. And so if you can make it so that the platelets don't stick together as much, you're less likely to make that patch and less likely to get blockage. And so if you eat garlic, you want to eat it, you want to crush it and let it sit before you cook it. So if you crush it, then that helps with the formation of allicin. So that way you get more allicin. If you just, you want to crush it and let it sit before you eat, that's interesting. We talked about olive oil already. Really good for you in the Mediterranean diet, has loads of antioxidants and polyphenols, monounsaturated fats. There's definitely studies that show that people with high risk of heart disease have a 35% lower risk of developing it if they consume olive oil. And higher intakes of olive oil are associated with a 48% lower risk of dying from heart disease. Really helpful.
How about that?
Olive oil is good for you.
We eat a lot of olive oil.
We eat a lot of olive oil.
We do.
We have some olive oil every day, I would say.
We do.
Or most days. Yeah.
Most days. Yeah. Most days. For
like
sure.
If we have a salad, we have olive oil on the salad. That's how that works. And it can lower your blood pressure. And like we said, you can put it in your salad and you can saute stuff with the olive oil. Edamame. So once again, edamame is made from soybeans. Mm. So, I usually snack on edamame. I haven't been doing that lately.
It's crunchy.
Yes. Well, that's the, that's toasted edamame.
Oh.
Then you can get the pods and you can steam them and eat them that way.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, when you eat edamame, it's an immature soybean. And so because it's immature, it's easy to chomp on. And it has a lot of isoflavones, and isoflavones are phytoestrogens, and they bond to, so phytoestrogens are good for men and women, okay? So they bond to your estrogen receptors, and so they, places where you need more estrogen stimulation, they will help with that, and places where you need less, they'll help with that too. They're amphoteric. They have a raising and lowering effect. So, there was an analysis of 11 studies that showed soy isoflavones reduced cholesterol by a significant amount, by both LDL, by total cholesterol as well as LDL. And the lowering is not extreme, but say you have flax seeds and fish oil and berries and leafy greens, and you have a whole stack of all of these things that lower your LDL, by pretty soon your LDL is going to be normal. So if you only had soy protein and then ate a junky diet and you went from an LDL of 190 to 180, that's not so great. But if you had, you know, if you got rid of a lot of sugar and you ate leafy greens and you ate tomatoes and soybeans and regular beans and berries and olive oil, and you had a whole stack of all of these things, pretty soon you're in much better shape. So Even slightly reducing your cholesterol can have a big impact on your cardiovascular disease, because it just takes one molecule to set off a reaction that causes you to have damaged endothelium, have damaged blood vessel, the inside of your blood vessels. So it doesn't take much. And so lowering your cholesterol, and it's particularly your LDL cholesterol, if your LDL is small and dense, also if your LDL is oxidized. The less LDL you have, the less likely you are to have oxidized LDL. However, if you have not very much LDL and it's small and dense, that's not good for you either. So in that case, you might want to have more LDL that's large and buoyant. And all of the things that we're talking about today can give you a good LDL profile. It can increase the size of your LDL, decrease the number of particles that you have, and increase the total density of your LDL. So when you measure LDL, you measure the size of the particles, how many particles you have, and how much space it takes up. So if you have if you have an LDL of, say, 83, which, and that, you know, it's less than the reference range, which is 100, but all of your particles are small and dense, it would be better to have an LDL of 110 if all of the particles were large and buoyant, because those large particles take up more space. So when you are told by your doctor you have an LDL of, say, 110, it's measured in milligrams per deciliter, which is a mass. It's the amount of space that it takes up. So large buoyant LDL takes up more space than small dense LDL. And it's better to have large buoyant LDL. So if you have so that's why it's really fraught to simply measure somebody's LDL without seeing what kind of LDL they have. And what has happened in recent years, I used to measure people's, I used to do these expanded lipid panels for all my patients, or most of my patients, and certainly the patients that were coming in for high cholesterol and cardiovascular disease. And all of a sudden, some of the insurance companies are refusing to cover it. They say there's no evidence that measuring these things really helps to further outcomes, which is just terrible, because now you're telling somebody who has an LDL of 83 and it's small and dense that they're fine, and they're not fine. And unless the patient's willing to pay for it, I don't have a way to assess that. And so this is really bad. And I that's why I wind up sending people to cardiologists who then go ahead and measure it. It's something that I used to be able to do quite easily. And I can do it. It's just that there's a chance that the test won't get covered. So sometimes what I'll do is I'll do maybe one of the tests. I'll either do oxidized LDL, or I'll do the lipoprotein fractionation. I'll just do one of those tests. And if the patient has to pay a little bit of money for that, it's worth it. So, but those are really, I've also tried to do it. I used to do those tests on everyone, and now I don't do that anymore. If I don't know what's going on with somebody's lipids, I just give them a basic lipid panel and start from there. So they come in complaining of cardiovascular health and they're saying, my doc wants to put me on a statin, then we're going to start thinking about doing those expanded panels. Because if a patient has large buoyant LDL and they have an LDL of 130 and they're very fit and active and they're eating a great diet and they have no evidence of cardiovascular disease, why do we want to put them on a statin? I don't tend to agree with that. All right, let's talk about green tea. Green tea. I love my green tea. I like green. Like I said, I think I was Asian in a past life because I love green tea flavored things. I love green tea flavored sweets. I almost bought a container of green tea ice cream, but I'm trying to back off on the ice cream. Well, you know what I could do? I could buy some lower calorie ice cream, vanilla flavored.
And sprinkle some green tea powder on.
Well, that's it. Let it melt and I'll stir some matcha into it and then I'll have matcha.
I'm not as fond of the flavors.
I love it. Well, there's something in it that my body really does well with. You know, it's probably. So big shout out to Rich Barrett, who is my teacher at the National College of Naturopathic Medicine, which is now the National University of Naturopathic Medicine. He said to me once, he offered me lipotrophic factors when I was in clinic. He said, "You're from New Jersey. It's your birthright." Thanks. Yeah, because Jersey is known for the New Jersey Turnpike and having a bit of a pollution problem when you get up around Linden and Elizabeth, unfortunately, because that's where the Linden cogeneration station it kind of pollutes a lot. And then you have all of the oil refineries up there, too. So I didn't live right there. I lived in Central Jersey, which is a little bit further down and wasn't nearly as polluted. In fact, we had a lot of suburbia there, but we also, surrounding the suburbia, were a lot of farms. And I didn't realize how much farmland there was. I mean, I had some idea because we would drive out to more rural areas, but when I started riding with the Princeton Freewheelers on my bike, they know where all the great farm roads are. It was terrific, and there's preserved farmland all over Central Jersey in the flat part in the Pine Barrens, and then, of course, we go to northwestern New Jersey and the far north New Jersey, not the part of New Jersey that's next to the George Washington Bridge, you know, next to New York, but north of that. Like we're talking Sussex County. It's gorgeous there. It's very hilly and it's mountainous and it's got, you know, a lot of trees and there's farmland. And it's lovely up there when you get to north and northwest, like due north, Sussex County in that area and then Morris County and then the northwestern counties of New Jersey. It's really gorgeous up there. So, and in fact, a lot of New Jersey is gorgeous. That's why they call it the Garden State, because there are, in fact, farms there, lots of them. Jersey tomatoes, Jersey corn, awesome stuff. Okay, so let's go back to green tea. Lots of polyphenols and catechins, really good for you. Terrific antioxidants, they reduce inflammation, protect your heart health. Higher intake of green tea catechins was associated with lower levels of LDL and total cholesterol, and also tends to decrease blood pressure. And there's a study that found that if you take green tea extract for a few months, it can help with all of your cardiovascular factors, your LDL, your triglycerides, your total cholesterol, and your blood pressure. And if you drink matcha, so what matcha is if you take green tea and you turn it into a powder, you grind it into a powder, that benefits heart health. And the nice thing about matcha is you're actually consuming the tea leaves, whereas when you make tea out of tea leaves and you just let it steep, then you're just getting the constituents off of the tea that fall into the water. When you take matcha, you're just consuming the leaves, so you're going to get more antioxidant benefit that way. And it's true that matcha is very bitter. And I could have it straight without sweetener in it, with a tiny bit of sweetener, all the better. So I would just drink a cup of matcha, you know, with matcha, like iced matcha tea with a little lemon and a tiny bit of sweetener. That would be great. Having a cup of matcha with a little bit of honey in it hot, that's great too. But I also like matcha flavored things like your matcha lattes and your matcha ice cream. And matcha ice cream is great. And that's green tea ice cream. It's green. It's ice cream that's dark. And we're not talking like pale green, like chocolate mint ice cream. Chocolate mint ice cream usually has coloring in it to make it that color green. If you get chocolate mint ice cream that hasn't been colored, it's white and it just tastes minty and there's chocolate chips in it. But green tea ice cream is green because they stir matcha into it and it makes it this beautiful deep green. It's not pale green like the chocolate mint. It's like almost an olive green. And I think it's beautiful. And I just love it. I just eat it up. Very good for you. So, all right. Why don't we finish off? Here is somebody who wrote an article about whether krill oil, because we mentioned krill oil before. First of all, what the heck is krill? Krill are these little tiny crustaceans that are smaller than shrimp, and big whales love to eat them. And the cool thing about them is that because they're like shrimp and they're like prawns, the thing with crustaceans is crustaceans have astaxanthin in them. That's what makes them that pretty orange color. And that's what makes flamingos pink. Do you know what color flamingos would be if they didn't eat little crustaceans and things?
They wouldn't be pink. They'd be white.
That's probably right. Exactly, yeah. Right. If you take a flamingo and you don't feed it astaxanthin, it's white. But they eat so much crustacean material that they turn pink. It's so cute. I wonder if I turn... Well, that's true. I was going to say, if I ate a lot of astaxanthin, would I turn pink? And the answer is, if you eat a lot of colored vegetables and fruit, you're going to have better color. And there's a number of reasons. One of the reasons, I don't know if you could see this. This is my palm. it really doesn't show on Facebook Live. But my palm is a little orangey. And why is it a little orangey? Because of all the carotenoids I eat. I eat a lot of leafy greens and a lot of carrots. And we have sweet potatoes and squash. And we eat something with carotenoids every day. And so that's going to show in my fat. So if, God forbid, I died and you had to look at my fat for some reason.
Ew.
I mean, if I hadn't, I'm not going to die. But anyway.
Don't do that.
So, I mean,
no
if, I got a, if I got a cut and you saw my fat, which you don't want, I don't want to have a cut that's that deep. But anyway, mm-mm. I'd have orange fat because I'm eating so much antioxidant. That's why. Fish oil, which is usually derived from anchovies, mackerel, salmon, and sardines. It's very, very popular. The dietary benefits come from the EPA and DHA in it, which are omega-3 fatty acids that are used in our bodies for health. Krill oil has emerged as another way to get your EPA and DHA. So Antarctic krill, whales, seals, penguins, and other birds eat it, also rich in EPA and DHA. But the fatty acids in krill are structurally different than those in fish oil, and so that can impact how the body tends to use them. And krill oil also looks different because of the astaxanthin. It's kind of reddish. There are those who think that you absorb krill oil better, and the fatty acids, and it's because the fatty acids are in fish oil are in the triglyceride form. Much of the fatty acids in krill, fatty acids in fish oil are triglycerides. In krill oil, they're actually phospholipids. So because they're phospholipids, they might absorb a little bit better because when something's a phospholipid, your cells, you have a chance of absorbing it in both the fatty side and the water-soluble side. So you're going to tend to get it into your cells better. There was a study where they pitted people head-to-head. Some took fish oil and some took krill oil, and their blood levels of EPA and DHA were higher in those with the krill oil. And another study gave participants fish oil or about two-thirds the same amount of krill oil, and the amount of EPA and DHA in the blood was the same whether they took fish oil or krill oil, even though the dose of krill oil was lower. And then there are other people who have done meta-analysis and seen that there's not enough evidence to say that you should take one over the other. There are more antioxidants in the krill oil because of the astaxanthin, and it helps to protect it from going rancid on the shelf. Although that hasn't been confirmed. And the astaxanthin itself is really good for good for inflammation and helping to protect against cardiovascular disease. And astaxanthin, I take astaxanthin by itself. I take fish oil and I take an astaxanthin pill. That's how I do it. Really good for your cardiovascular health. And so ultimately, krill oil. There are some studies that. Say that krill oil may be more helpful. There have been studies that it helps with your weight and things like that. The only thing is that fish oil is cheaper and it's more accessible. And the thing is, if you get a higher level of krill oil, of EPA and DHA in your blood because you took krill oil, you could just take a little more fish oil and you probably get the same result. So that's basically where it's at. Anyway, so that's the thing. If you want to try taking krill oil, you can, and you don't have to. So I guess that's where it's at. It will still either one is going to be helpful for you, and they can, and you can figure out which one is going to work for you. So I'm going to go now. You've been listening to Radio Naturopath, a talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or life licensee of this station. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Doors, and WHUS.org.